Your Sunday betting recap is live here from VSiN and VSiN.com. Welcome into the South Point Hotel and Casino here in Las Vegas. Alongside Amal Shah, I'm Adam Candy. Week six in the books for the most part, just a couple games left to take us home. One big surprise today, I would say. Otherwise, a lot of games that went largely to form. We're going to talk to some of your VSiN favorites about all of their action from today. Jonathan Von Tobel will join us in a bit, along with Matt Eumanns. And of course, Ben Fox always comes on for the last segment to talk about all those big bets from not only Las Vegas, but from across the country, as well as the betting trends overall from the day. Amal, let's start from the top here with week six and talk about your top takeaways from what you've seen thus far.
You know, I was impressed with Tampa, the way they bounced back in terms of they were 3-2. They were a little bit inconsistent. Green Bay was coming in hot, 4-0. They were coming off of a bye. Great opportunity for them to kind of put themselves at the top of the NFC heap. But Tampa responded, trailing in this game 10-0. They get back-to-back interceptions. One goes for a touchdown. The other one back to the Green Bay 2-yard line, capitalizing on that, scoring 28 points in the second quarter. And that turned out to be the difference in the ball game. And then in the second half, it was just an absolute snooze fest. Tampa extended that lead, and Green Bay never got back into it.
Let's talk a little bit more about that game with the Buccaneers and the Green Bay Packers. This is a game that had a lot of line movement during the week. And I think this line move was one of those things, Amal, that was a victim of the last thing that you saw, right? The last time we saw the Packers, they were rolling offensively in New Orleans. The last time we saw the Buccaneers, everybody was looking at Tom Brady throwing four fingers up for forgetting it was fourth down against the Chicago Bears. Packers went off as 3-point favorites, total of 55. Boy, we looked like we were going to get there for a while in terms of over, but we do stay under that one as Tampa moves to 4-2 on the year. Packers dropped to 4-1.
Yeah, who would have thought Green Bay scores 10 points in the first quarter and then doesn't score anything else the rest of the game? And to your point about these totals, if you wind up in a blowout situation, it always becomes very difficult because that fourth quarter, it seemed like both teams were trying to get to the locker room as quick as possible. And Aaron Rodgers comes out of the game as well as Tom Brady. So really an underwhelming performance. Rodgers really struggled at times after those two interceptions. Now, one of those was completely his fault. The other one was a tip ball, and it was a nice play by the defense, but still unfortunate for him. And give this Tampa team credit, Adam. They capitalized when they needed to, but now can they sustain it? You know, you get Chris Godwin back in the lineup, had an impact in a positive way, but Mike Evans, one catch for 10 yards, really didn't have much. How will they kind of mix these guys in there along with Rob Gronkowski, who had his best day of the season?
Yeah, I think the Gronk thing is something to keep an eye on here because he has not obviously been what I think anyone would have expected, himself included. And if there is even the possibility of a game like this coming out in the playoffs for Tampa Bay, that really diversifies the attack a bit to give Tom Brady an easy look over the middle of the field to Gronkowski. Most of the props that you would have had in this game, despite the 38 points from Tampa, go under. The only one, shockingly, is the Aaron Rodgers over 11.5 rushing yards. That does go over. To the point that we were just starting to talk about here, Amal, last week, 6-6 on the totals. This week, thus far, unders 7-4. So we're starting to see a correction from early in the year. Do you think that's more about the guys behind the counter beginning to adjust a little bit, or do you think we're just kind of settling back in a little bit more to what we're used to seeing in the NFL, which is that totals tend to normalize to close to 50-50.
Yeah, I think it's more of a little bit of a normalization. But if you look at the Green Bay-Tampa Bay game, I think that's one that had probably been closer to 50 or 51 a few weeks back. But now, all of a sudden, with the way the games have been going, it's flying over. Remember the Browns-Steelers game? The Steelers put up 38 points. And for that game not to go over the total, always difficult from that perspective. You bet that one. The total was 50, Adam. If I tell you the Steelers got 38 points, you're probably taking the over all day. You need the Browns to get 12 points. I think there was some sloppy football. If you look at some of these matchups, Jets, they couldn't even score a single point. They lose 24-0. You know, I mentioned the Browns-Steelers game, that Washington Giants game, that could have potentially gone over the total, but that Washington decided to go for two. That changed the entire dynamic of that total, so that came into play. You know, for me, I'm not going to necessarily judge it based on the results of the fact that seven games went under the total. I'll tell you what, how about Denver? They were trying to kick as many field goals as absolutely humanly possible. They kicked six in this one. New England struggled offensively. So for me, it wasn't as much of a scenario.
Denver did not get into the end zone and won this game by 6 points. That shows you just how poorly the Patriots played today. It's your Sunday betting recap here from VSiN and VSiN.com. Adam Candy and Amal Shah running through everything that's happened thus far in week six of the NFL. We are contractually obligated, I'll show you the fine print if you really want to see it, to talk about the Jets and the Dolphins. It is an NFL game, in theory. It was no fun to watch. Amal liked it because his survivor pick with the Dolphins came home pretty easily. 24-0 the final. Most of that built up in the first half by the Miami Dolphins. Not even worth talking about the mechanics of this game. It's under, obviously. The Jets are terrible. The Dolphins did just enough. Did you learn anything that's going to be useful to you the rest of the year from either of these teams?
Well, look, I think Miami's going to be competitive, but they've got some areas they've still got to continue to shore up. I mean, they're sitting at 3-3. They're going to be a team that's a potential wild card. I don't know how many people have this team getting into the wild card. I think there's a great chance. Who would have thought in week six the Miami Dolphins are ahead of the New England Patriots in the standings? Fitzpatrick, you know, look, he goes 18 for 27 for a buck 91. That sounds great, Adam, when you just say that. But throwing the two interceptions. Now, one was a terrific play by May on that interception for the New York Jets. I still think, though, they've got to capitalize when they have opportunities. They only scored 3 points after halftime. You can point to the fact that, look, you don't want to take any risk. You're playing it more conservatively. You knew the Jets weren't going to be able to move the football on you. So give them credit from that perspective in terms of what they were able to do.
Tua Tagovailoa does get on the field at the end of the game. That was fun. 2 for 2 for 9 yards for our friend Tua. Joe Flacco, 21 to 44, 186, an interception. And I'm sure a lot of memes of Sam Darnold saying, how you like me now?
Well, I mean, look, I don't know if Jets fans necessarily love Sam Darnold. I had a lot of question marks about him coming out of USC. But Joe Flacco, 35 years old, I mean, this guy's good for taking a picture with. He's a statue. And the bottom line is this team is not going anywhere fast. I know Adam Gase, obviously his job is in severe jeopardy. But the players, nobody wants to lose. But Adam, at this point in time, this is not going to be a playoff team. You're looking at now, where are the Jets going to draft? Is it going to be one? Is it going to be two? Is it going to be three? And here's the big question mark. If you do have the first or second or third pick, are you drafting a quarterback? You know, I always thought it was impressive what Arizona did. They draft Josh Rosen, and then they said, you know what? No, we're going to take Kyler Murray, and they went with it, and it's been a vast upgrade of what they had previously. And the Jets are kind of in that similar situation. But I don't know how poor the Jets' defense is because they're on the field constantly. At one point in time in this game, the Jets had 6 out of 9 possessions. They were 3 and outs. No matter how good a defense is, if you're out there playing constantly, you're going to get worn out. And so you got to be able to really get an idea and a sense of, hey, is it a deficiency offensively, the offensive line? Where is this team deficient, or is it across the board that they need so much it's going to take several years?
Would you believe it? I could win a bar bet with you on this. That the New York Jets actually won time of possession today. Believe it or not, they actually had the ball more than the Miami Dolphins, and they just did absolutely nothing with it. They punted 10 times in this game, and frankly, that's as much as I can stomach in terms of giving this game our time here. Let's get to a game that was much better and more interesting. The Houston Texans visiting the Tennessee Titans. Amal, this game goes to overtime, where the Titans get the ball and don't look back. 42-36, they defeat the Houston Texans. A.J. Brown, touchdown reception from Ryan Tannehill at the very end of regulation to send this thing to overtime. All right. Obviously goes over. Titans cover the 4. Let's get back into something we started to discuss earlier. Sir, the floor to discuss Romeo Crennel going for 2, up 7.
Yeah, so if you're unaware, Houston Texans score a touchdown late in this football game, and they had an opportunity to go up by 8, but Romeo Crennel decided to go for a 2-point conversion. They scored with a minute 50 to go, and they failed to make the 2-point conversion, so it left it as a 7-point game. Ryan Tannehill and company go down, get the touchdown, which Adam alluded to with A.J. Brown. They score with 4 seconds remaining. They kick the extra point, send it to overtime, and then Derrick Henry punches it in from about 6 yards out. But I thought, Adam, if they take the 2-point, if they just kick the extra point, they go up by 8. And here's my argument for that. If you get if you give up a touchdown, the opponent still has to make the 2-point conversion. We saw that happen to the Baltimore Philadelphia game, and I know we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But to me, you've just got to put yourself in a situation where you're up 8. I always feel like when teams need a 2-point conversion, they're unable to execute successfully. Look, if Houston converts it, they win the game. But I don't know. I felt like mentally it changes the dynamic from a Tennessee perspective. Because I always think when I have a team and they're down by 8 points, I'm like, you know, I don't really care if we score because we still got to get the two-point conversion. They'll probably call something so dumb it's going to cost us the opportunity to tie the game up. So for me, I didn't like the decision at all. I thought you kick the extra point, get up by eight.
I see the logic in what Romeo Crennel was doing because you're telling me at that point, I have to get 2 yards to win the game. The game is over if Deshaun Watson can get into the end zone at that point. And I think that the way that the Titans had been gashing the Texans on the other side of the ball, I would want to end the game right there, if at all possible. And Romeo Crennel rolled the dice. He lost on it. I think there's a reasonable debate to be had on either side of this one, but the Houston Texans drop to 1-5 as this game goes to overtime. Most of your props go over, including Deshaun Watson and Ryan Tannehill's passing props, both going over. Derrick Henry goes over on 103.5. I have to tell you a quick story. I saw this prop at the very end of the morning at about 9:58. And I would like to thank the unnamed book that timed me out on my bet at 10 because I had the under on Derrick Henry queued up and the little wheel spun and told me, sorry, you're too late. And thank you. You saved me some money.
Yeah, but I tend to agree with you. It's hard to bet a running back over 104 yards, right? I mean, he had the 94-yard run and he still would have gotten over the total, but that included overtime. I mean, he may not have necessarily gotten there, but who knows how that drive plays out. But it's hard to sit there and go and say, okay. And here's the other thing, Adam. If his team is trailing, all of a sudden that prop even looks better. So I get where you're coming from that betting perspective, but give Tennessee credit. They run the ball effectively. You know, this was a game they dominated in the first half, and then Houston comes out and flips the switch in the second half and played particularly well. Deshaun Watson and company capitalizing, J.J. Watt getting a sack, forced fumble. But Houston now sitting at 1-5. I just felt like, hey, they got to find a way to win this football game. And I can appreciate where Romeo Crennel is coming from, but I got a question for you. Do you feel like by deciding to go for two, it's a little bit of an indictment on your defense?
I think it's not only an indictment. I mean, it is an admission of guilt. Like, you have said that I don't trust my defense. Look, you have to appreciate what the Titans did to the Houston Texans. They put up more than 600 yards of offense, including overtime, on Houston today. If I'm Romeo Crennel, and I was the defensive coordinator of this team at one point, I know what my defense can and can't do. Derrick Henry had 212 yards on the ground today. I truly believe I have to say I have one shot to end this game here, and I'm going to end it because we haven't been able to stop anybody all day.
Well, if you make the argument, the way you phrase that, I would agree with you because basically I'd rather have Deshaun Watson try and get 2 yards than Tannehill and Derrick Henry have to prevent them from getting 2 yards themselves. So from that perspective, I can see where you're coming from. But, you know, the one thing is they get 75 yards in the overtime when they got the ball after the touchback. And then, of course, the 94-yard run by Derrick Henry. So to me, you're looking at 169 yards there that I could sit there and say it's one play and it's an overtime situation. But I don't know. I thought he should have had a little bit more faith and confidence in this team defensively because they did a really nice job in the second half for the most part.
Moving on to Indianapolis and Cincinnati. If you just look at the final score of this game, Amal, 31-27, Indianapolis gets the victory. You would probably think, oh, pretty good back and forth game. Phillip Rivers gets back on track. Joe Burrow looking better than he did against the Ravens last week. That is not at all how this game went. Colts, of course, do not cover any number that you had them at. If you got the Bengals early in the week, you weren't sweating this thing at all. This was as big as 9.5. It went off at 7.5. Total of 46 goes well over. The Cincinnati Bengals had a 21-0 lead 15 minutes into this game, and then Indianapolis woke up and decided to play.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it was funny. A friend of mine texted me and said, oh, you know what? Colts could be in trouble in terms of the survivor. And I'm like, there's still 3 quarters to go. And by the time you got to halftime, it was 24-21. I mean, it was a game where it felt like, you know, the Colts had an opportunity to be able to win it very comfortably. Look, when you're Cincinnati, you've got to capitalize on your opportunities. Randy Bullock misses a 47-yard field goal when they were trailing 28-27 with about 6-7 minutes to go in the football game. You've got to make that one. Your team trying to win on the road with a rookie quarterback. I thought Joe Burrow played well for the most part. He did have an interception critical down the stretch. He had an underneath receiver in T. Higgins, who I think he was trying to go to Tyler Boyd. Didn't work out, and they come up short in this one. But I tell you, pay attention to Cincinnati from a betting perspective. Today you were getting, mine was an opener at about 9.5, Adam. Closed at 7.5. This team getting more than a touchdown, particularly if it's at 8 or so, you can tease it up to 14. I think this team's going to be dangerous down the stretch.
I agree with you, and one of the more underrated names, I think, if you are a prop player, if you are a DFS player, T. Higgins, you just mentioned what he's done. Here are the target shares for T. Higgins through the first 5 weeks. 6, 9, 7, 8, and 8 for T. Higgins up to this point. Yes, I know we've played 6 weeks, but those are the ones that we have the information on right now. It's someone that Joe Burrow is looking for, and I think he's going to be a key part of this offense going forward. For Indianapolis, we talked yesterday about the fact that coming off that Cleveland game where Phillip Rivers did very little to help the Indianapolis Colts to win, that we thought that Indianapolis would be trying to reestablish Phillip Rivers at home in the dome. 371 and 3 touchdowns for Rivers. More importantly, 44 passing attempts against 15 rushing attempts for Indianapolis.
Now, the full credit on Rivers' revival today, aside from Frank Reich, you called it yesterday. I'm not as big of a believer in Phillip Rivers at this stage of his career. He's already thrown 6 interceptions on the season, threw one today. Bengals capitalized on it, getting 7 points. But I didn't think they would take that approach, Adam, and you were right. They went out, they threw the ball 44 passing yards. Jonathan Taylor, just 12 carries for 60 yards. But I think this team's going to need to run the ball more effectively if they're going to have a chance down the stretch. Cincinnati's got a poor defense. We know that. But Adam, my concern is when you look at it from a Colts perspective, how does Rivers respond when there's pressure? I know they were trailing by 21 in this game, but he just continues to throw balls up at times. You're like, what is he doing? And I think that's going to come back to bite Indy at some point in time.
There are some quarterbacks who can get away with that with arm strength, right? They can fire something down the field, and if it hits, it hits. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, with Phillip Rivers, it looks like a volleyball set when he throws it up there, and it doesn't go the way he wants it to. And I'm not going to take a ton of credit on the 44 passing attempts and Rivers being reestablished because they were down 21-0 early. They really didn't have a chance to go after the run, but they did end up going that way. So
I thought there was enough time with Taylor, who I think is a terrific back, at least where he was in college. I thought there was enough time for them to do what they needed. You knew you were going to be able to move the ball against Cincinnati's defense, but give the Bengals credit. They came out fired up in the first half of the game, just couldn't hold on late. It would have been impressive if Burrow could have taken him down the stretch there. It would have been his first career come from behind win, but come up a little bit short.
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the fact, Amal, that this is a day where unders have actually ruled the day thus far. Not in Minnesota. 40-23 Atlanta over the Minnesota Vikings. We are now talking about a pair of 1-5 teams. Atlanta wins as $1.75 money line dog on the road, well over the total of 53. 10 points in each quarter for Atlanta. If there is any cure for a quarterback who is struggling, it is the Minnesota secondary. Matt Ryan goes 30 of 40, 371 and 4 touchdowns as Atlanta responds well to the coaching change away from Dan Quinn.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it was impressive for Atlanta to be able to really bounce back like this on the road. I mean, Minnesota scores a late touchdown, gets a 2-point conversion. It was 40-15. But if you look at the Falcons, defensively, they can't get much worse than they started out. Gave up 38-40 in the first 2 weeks, 30-30 in the next 2 weeks. And now the last 2 weeks, it's been 23-23. So we'll see if this team could take a step in the right direction. If you look at the NFC East, I think we would all agree at this point in time, no wild card is going to come from that division. The NFC West looks like they're going to have two teams, a potential third. The NFC South, where the Falcons sit right now, you're looking at two teams there. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but I think this is a team that is going to be dangerous from a betting perspective because we know one thing, their offense can move the football. And Adam, for me, Atlanta's the type of team that's tough to bet against because you've got Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley. These guys can put up some points. They're going to be dangerous.
This number was bet down on the total during the week from 57-53. Would have covered any of those. One question I want to ask you, because one thing you did call yesterday was you were worried about the absence of Dalvin Cook for Minnesota. Alexander Mattison runs 10 times for 26 yards. I am an ascriber to the belief of running backs do not have that much variance between them, but maybe the difference between Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison is bigger than we thought.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in running backs. I understand they've been devalued in the National Football League, but for me, when you've got an elite player in terms of doing both things out of the backfield, running and catching the ball, Dalvin Cook, I'm not saying he's necessarily Christian McCaffrey, but he might be a shade below it. He's a difference maker, in my opinion. Here's the other thing, that you see a lot more screen game with him, and you also see a comfort level in Kirk Cousins when Dalvin Cook is in the game. Today, Alexander Mattison, just one catch for 4 yards. And, you know, look, it was the Minnesota defense. And I traced this loss back to last Sunday night in Seattle. I thought that collapsed, the decision to go for the the first down instead of kicking the field goal was the reason why Minnesota lost this football game. It was lost last Sunday night, but I think you need a playmaker of his caliber. Adam, to me, in the Carolina game, and we'll touch upon it a little bit later on, if you've got Christian McCaffrey, I don't think we see the fumble that Mike Davis had. There are certain players who are elite and they're difference makers. To me, Dalvin Cook is one of those guys at the tailback position.
I'm going to tell you why Minnesota is a team I can't bet the rest of the way here. Look at the Kirk Cousins numbers from this game. 24 of 36, 343 and three touchdowns, three interceptions. His QBR with 343 and three touchdowns was 28 on the day. He is a landmine. He is someone where you don't know where one of these games is lurking, where he is going to take his team out of it single-handedly. And this is a guy who is rated by Pro Football Focus top 10 this year in terms of passing grade. I was touting this offense with Justin Jefferson put into it as a better offense. And today, Amal, I mean, they didn't lose just because of Kirk Cousins, but he was a big part of it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Anything that has Kirk Cousins in the top 10 of its stats, you know one thing, that count, actually, there's only eight people involved in that. Because there's no way Kirk Cousins can be the top 10 of anything from a quarterback's standpoint. This guy's got 11 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. How do you have 10 picks already? I mean, come on, give me a break. I've never been a Kirk Cousins guy. They've got some playmakers on the outside. Their offense is still good. They're young defensively. They've got some issues, but they've been competitive. Man, three picks? Whoa.
To answer a question that Kirk Cousins posed to us a while ago, no, I don't like that. Social coming up in a moment here on VSiN. Back to your Sunday betting recap here from VSiN and VSiN.com. Alongside Amal Shah, I'm Adam Candy. One of my favorite segments of the week, Amal, when we go out to the social media world, it is always nuanced. It is always patient. We never hear from anyone who has a hot take on Sunday afternoon after they've watched how much football? 6 hours of football on a Sunday afternoon. I feel like when you've been glued to the couch all day, those hot takes come flying out of your fingers onto Twitter. So let's throw it out there. If you're on VSiN.com right now, you can follow along with us. Otherwise, I will read the tweets for you. Our first one up on the screen from Eric Rosenthal at Eric Sports. The Jets getting to start over with a new coach and Trevor Lawrence next year is a reward they don't deserve. What do you think, Amal?
It's going to be interesting. I think, you know, look, the way the Jets are trending, they're going to be 0-16. So that should get them the first overall pick. I think you have to take Trevor Lawrence. Now it's going to be a question mark. Does he decide to go back to Clemson? I think Clemson's paying pretty well. They got Travis Etienne, a running back, to come back.
Well, I would say that if you consider it a reward to get Trevor Lawrence in that spot and a new coach, just remember what Jets fans have gone through to get to that point. There is a yin and yang to it. All right. Danny Trevathan, former NFL player at Grindin 59. That's right. Apologize. You are right, JJ, still in the league. We need to start fining refs. This is ludicrous on me. And then there's an emoji of someone huffing.
Well, you know, I was watching this game and I kind of may have turned away or I was looking at another game at the time. I don't know if he's referring to the sack where he got a call for a personal foul. Actually, no, that was against Carolina. So I'm trying to think of what play he's referring to, but I understand where he's coming from. So many of these calls, sometimes you're like, what is going on? I don't know about you guys. Do you guys sit there and hold your breath on every incompletion, especially when it's a team that you have that's on defense? You just assume it's going to be illegal contact, PI, defensive holding. Which one of the trifectas are they going to pick?
Do I get any credit since it's Danny Trevathan's 10th year in the league that I thought he had already retired?
Absolutely, yeah.
Apparently so. All right, well, yes, to answer your question, I do hold my breath on incompletions, but that's mostly because I'm wondering where did Daniel Jones throw the ball. Kyle Tucker at Kyle Tucker underscore ATH. Derrick Henry on Ryan Tannehill. MVP, let's start the campaign right now. I think he should be in that conversation definitely. Ooh, that is a scorching hot take from Derrick Henry on Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was funny. I was thinking about that when we were describing this game earlier, because to me, I think it's a scenario where this guy's the difference maker for this football team. Tannehill got this big contract because of Derrick Henry and what he was able to do last year. He was the difference in this football game today. Runs for over 200 yards. I think he's leading the league right now in rushing or is near the top. He's been outstanding so far this year. He goes for 212. I think this is a guy that we could see eventually push that record in terms of single game record and rushing yardage. He's got a shot.
Well, I'll tell you this. The completion percentage is there. The QBR has been okay on Ryan Tannehill. I think we're going to need a little bit more evidence to overrule Russell Wilson at this point. Let's go all the way to the other end of the spectrum here. Eric Edholm on Twitter. Joe Flacco passing Joe Montana for career passing yards doesn't sit all that well with me.
You know, I'm trying to think of who the quarterback I was looking at the stats of. He's 12th. Carson Palmer. He's 12th all time in terms of passing yards. You know, this longevity, the game has changed completely. Everybody's throwing the ball all over the yard. I mean, look at today. We saw Tampa throw the ball with a 28-point lead three consecutive times when they could have run the ball and killed the clock. The mindset, the mentality of the game has changed completely. Joe Flacco passing Joe Montana is an utter disgrace. I said if Steve Bisciotti was a totally prolific businessman, an Elon Musk of his generation, he would have said to Flacco after they won the Super Bowl, Joe, it's been real. We're going to help you pack or we're paying you $15 million. We're not giving you this exorbitant contract.
This is a statement for anybody who tries to use counting stats to do Hall of Fame resumes. Stop it. Stop it right now. That's how Frank Gore is going to end up getting into the Hall of Fame because he's been in the league for 27 years.
I agree with you on Gore. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. At what point in time did you ever look at Frank Gore and say, this guy is the top three running back in the NFL?
No way. All right. Pete Fiatak, college overtime is better and more fair. College overtime is better and more fair. He said it three times. It's beyond ridiculous to have an overtime system that doesn't allow both offenses an equal shot. He's referencing the Houston-Tennessee game.
Does he actually know anything about the NFL? Because I know he's covered college forever, but does he actually know anything about the NFL? That's my first question. Second question I'd ask is, every kicker in the National Football League can make a 42-yard field goal. In college, I'm not sure if the guys can make a 19-yard field goal.
Well, my point with this is, I didn't like it when a field goal could end the game. You basically, you know, get a kickoff and run it back for a few yards and get a quick pass. But if you can't stop the other team from getting a touchdown, why do you deserve to keep playing? I don't see
completely that. Agree with you.
All right. More when we come back from week 6 in the NFL. This is your Sunday betting recap here from VSiN and VSiN.com, the sports betting network. News. On Tuesday, October 27th, we'll be live streaming the entire Circa Grand Opening exclusively on VSiN.com. Starting at 10 p.m. Eastern, going all through the night, leading up to the first broadcast of Follow the Money from our new studios inside the Circa Sportsbook at 7 a.m. Eastern on Wednesday, October 28th. That's 12 hours of live insider coverage from the Circa Grand Opening event on the 27th and 28th, all for free on VSiN.com. Join Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, the VSiN team, and a guest list full of Las Vegas icons and celebrities for all the festivities, starting at 10 p.m. Eastern on the 27th, all for free, only on VSiN.com. Sunday betting recap from the South Point Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Adam Candy alongside Amal Shah. Getting back into the Week 6 card and some of the games that we did not get to earlier, this was the game that sort of ruined a few of my teasers this week. Broncos at the Patriots, Amal. 6 field goals by Brandon McManus. a horrendous performance offensively from New England. 18-12, your final. The Denver Broncos moved to 2-3. That's also where the New England Patriots are right now. Denver cashes plus 280 on the money line. You could have gotten that even bigger earlier in the week. New England was a 10-point favorite at one point this week, went off as a 7-point favorite, game under 44. And I want to mention something that our guy Steve Mackinnon in Point Spread Weekly had pointed out earlier this week. He talked about a number of plays that he's developed, and he talked about teams coming off byes favored by double digits, that they do not tend to perform particularly well overall. Well, this was a step even beyond that, Amal, as the New England Patriots looked in a way that they have not often in the Bill Belichick era.
Yeah, they really struggled in this game. And I'll tell you what, it was turnovers consistently throughout this game. But give their defense credit. They played well. They should have won this football game based on how their defense performed. It was the offensive woes that really were the big question mark with this team moving forward. Twice they had Julian Edelman throw passes in the fourth quarter, running trick plays. It just didn't seem like, Adam, they had any continuity in terms of offensively. Damian Harris, 6 carries for 19 yards. Cam Newton struggled in terms of his performance overall. 2 interceptions, only throws for 157 yards. Did have 76 yards rushing, but he had a big run for, I think, about 37, 38 yards. That put them in a position. This team, though, you know what? Denver did everything they could to allow the Patriots back in the game. 2 consecutive times, they threw the ball with Drew Lock. He gets intercepted. Patriots had an opportunity but could not capitalize on this one down the stretch late as Cam Newton came up short on fourth down, throws an incompletion, and that was the difference in the game.
Drew Lock looked like he was trying to apologize to Bill Belichick for not getting a Subway sub in the fourth quarter. Like, he was just doing everything he could to keep the New England Patriots in the game. 2 interceptions in the fourth quarter, but as you mentioned, it was the turnovers for New England today. 2 Cam Newton interceptions, a lost fumble when it looked like New England was driving, never got any rhythm going offensively, as the Patriots are going to find themselves in some trouble in the AFC East, no matter what happens with the Buffalo Bills tomorrow against the Chiefs. 44 is a low total, still does not get there in this game. Washington and the New York Giants, Amal. I know you had some interest in Washington in this game. This was just a horrendous football game to watch. And I say that as a Giants fan who was invested just from a fan perspective. 20-19, your final. Giants get their first win of the year. Washington scores a late touchdown after a Kyle Allen fumble leads to a scoop and score to give the Giants the lead. Ron Rivera goes for 2, does not get it. And New York holds on for the victory.
Yeah, again, I disagree with the decision to go for 2 there. I thought they had an opportunity to get this game to overtime. You're the first team to, you're the ones going to decide on the coin toss. If you win it, fine. If you don't, as you can live with that as well. But to me, the decision to go for 2 was the difference and impact of the total as well, because if they kick the extra point, you get to overtime, this thing could get over. When you look at Washington, though, this is just not a good football team. There's just no other way to put it. Kyle Allen does throw for 280, but I'm just not a believer in this team. I took these guys in a teaser today, Adam. I felt like it would be difficult for the Giants to be able to win this game by more than a football. I mean, by more than a touchdown. And neither of these teams are going to be bet on teams the rest of the way. I think you're going to be looking for opportunities, especially when they're at home, maybe to go against them, because you'll see lower lines in those situations in terms of looking at these Washington Giants team forward.
Daniel Jones has 4 NFL wins, 4 career wins, and he's 3-0 against Washington. That comes to us from Twitter. Daniel Jones threw for 112 yards today, his first touchdown since week 1 against Pittsburgh. The New York Giants offense put up 13 points today and somehow won this game.
I did not turn on a single play of this game. Were they running the triple option? Is that the only reason he had 112 yards passing? I mean, what's going on here? I mean, this guy, look, I was not a big fan of his coming out of Duke. I don't think he's the answer long-term for this team. I think both New York teams are going to be selecting quarterbacks next year. The Giants are going to be a bet against. Outside of that game against Dallas, they have not put up more than 21 points in any game this year. They did get to the 20 mark today, but that was compliments of a defensive touchdown by New York today when Kyle Allen fumbled the ball. So this Giants team, again, take a look at them in terms of betting opportunities going against them throughout the rest of the season.
Ravens and the Eagles. Didn't look like we were going to have much of a game until the fourth quarter, when the Philadelphia Eagles screamed their way back into the contest with 22 points. A 2-point conversion comes up short for Carson Wentz and Boston Scott at the end of the game. Baltimore 30, Philadelphia 28. Ravens were huge favorites in this game, laying 10, total of 46. Goes well past, obviously. What do you take out of the game from the Baltimore Ravens side? Because we've seen a few performances this year from the Ravens where it's good enough, but it's not really good.
They've got to get better offensively, particularly in the running game. That's the big concern you have from a Baltimore Ravens perspective. You know, I talked about this earlier. You look at Ingram, you look at Edwards, you look at Dobbins. They did not do a great job in terms of running the football. Obviously, Lamar Jackson, he's going to hit some big plays. That's who he is, and that's what he's capable of doing. But the other guys I just mentioned, 28 carries for a combined 74 yards. You've got to get more production out of your trio of running backs if they're going to be effective, because Lamar Jackson is still inconsistent in terms of throwing the ball. He does go 16 for 27 for a buck 86, but I'm not necessarily a believer in this team. If they fall behind, can he bring them back through the air? Defensively, they didn't play as well as they probably could have, but it's, you know, sometimes you get such a big lead and mentally you kind of evacuate the building. But give Philly credit, they fought back, and Carson Wentz is now starting to turn into the Matthew Stafford of the 2020 season, putting up points and stats when his team's behind by 2 to 3 scores.
Well, I'll tell you what, the analytics versus non-analytics crowd will have a discussion about one of Doug Peterson's choices early in the game when the Eagles were down 17-0. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside recovers the fumble in the end zone early third quarter. They go for two at 17-6. Don't get it. That forces them to go for two late. Had they kicked the extra point in that spot, they would have been in a position to kick the extra point at the end of the game. Yes, of course, the fallacy of the predetermined outcome. You can't say that all these things would have held true all the way through, that the game would have played out that way, but it is definitely going to make for some solid, solid hot take fodder. Maybe we can have another social media segment just looking at those types of decisions. Our man John Von Tobel on set, joining us in just a moment. This is your Sunday betting recap from VSiN. Welcome back into Sunday Betting Recap here on VSiN, or perhaps from VSiN.com. I'm Adam Candy, joined here by Amal Shah, as well as Jonathan Von Tobel on set with us right now. Guys, my voice I know is sounding very authoritative at the moment. We'll deal with that in just a second. John, you've been a busy man all day today. I know you started early in the day, and you are still rolling on here, getting ready for opening lines coming up here at 10 p.m. Eastern time. How did your week six go with your tickets?
Actually, really good. So I've been very lucky so far up to this point. We'll see what Sunday night brings, if I can have a flawless day, which are very rare. But, yeah, it's a good day so far.
All right, well, let's get right into it. And with the game that I know everyone expected was going to be the first one that you wanted to talk about, Detroit and Jacksonville. Detroit Lions cover as 3-point favorites on the road. You have been consistently going against the Jags here, you said, and they have lost 5 in a row.
Yeah, and so, like, this is what I find really interesting about this. And like, I'm always trying to, you're always trying to gauge like the market, right? And where the market's at in certain teams, and where you can find certain spots to come in against the market. And Jacksonville consistently has been a spot where you can come in. So like, take this for example, right? Week one, they opened 8.5-point underdog against Indianapolis. They closed 7. They won that game. They covered, obviously. Week two, opened 11, closed 7. They lost by 3 against Tennessee Titans. But then you start to get to, Adam, week 3 against the Dolphins. Originally, pick goes to Dolphin, or excuse me, Jags minus 3, closes 2.5. They lose outright. Week 4, opens 3 against the Bengals, closes 1.5. They don't lose. They don't cover that game as well. And now we're consistently looking at a game-to-game basis, Jacksonville. If you remember last week, 6.5 the open, gets down to 5.5 against Houston, closes back 6.5. 3.5. They don't cover that game either. And then here today, where it gets as high as 3.5, but then comes back down to 3 and closes, and they don't come close to covering this one either. And I feel like Jacksonville, the first 2 weeks, the market got treated really well by them. And then they have consistently, the market just bet on them from week to week, and it hasn't paid off. And I've been sitting back, and I've used them every single week except for one, or bet against them every single week except for one, because I feel like the market has been overvaluing this team, and so far I've been right. I wonder when the luck is going to run out there, but I think something like that is worth for bettors to pay attention to when you can consistently see a market overvaluing a team and you can come in and play the other side of it.
I don't necessarily agree that the luck's going to run out. I think you found something that's pretty good to bet on. I'm really mad because a friend of mine sent me a text about an hour before the game and goes, take Detroit, and I didn't take them. And here's the thing to me, and I like the point you made. Sometimes there's just certain teams, certain situations based on numbers, Lions coming off of a bye week. I thought it's a good opportunity to take the risk. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But this was a dominant performance. Forget the fact that it was an 18-point win. You know, Jags score late, about 5 minutes to go in this game. This game was never close in terms of the number.
Right, and just think about the Jags and what they are, just period, right? Without the market and their perception of them, you have a quarterback who's like pretty solid, but he's got a turnover. He's turnover prone, yeah. Right? He throws the ball into a lot of tight windows and has a lot of turnover-worthy plays. A defense that, in terms of DVOA, Adam, and I know you and I like it, I think they're 31st, 30th, something like that, right now in the National Football League. Like, that's not a team I want to bet on.
Gardner Minshew throws for 243, touchdown, interception. Pretty pedestrian day overall for Minshew. John, there were a couple of games today that I think we were going to get a read on teams, measuring stick games, right? And one of them was Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Were the Browns at all legit 4-1? Was Pittsburgh as good as they looked against the softest schedule in the NFL up until this point? I think we got an answer.
Yeah, and so this is actually my thought here. So I liked the Steelers today, but I wasn't insanely confident. So I teased them through, and I got them. You know, I teased them down to a +3 at home, and I used them with the Bears +7.5. But the thing that was with me here on this one, it's actually similar to Jacksonville, except it was kind of on the other side of it, where with Cleveland, I had been on them a couple of times, and you know, for their first five games, the market had been all over them. You're like week one, Baltimore 8.5 closes 7, the Washington Football Team 6.5 up to 7.5, Dallas 4.5 to 3.5. The Colts game where it got all the way to Colts 2 and then closed Cleveland -1. But I thought there was a couple of things. Pittsburgh and Baltimore are really similar in terms of at least their defensive makeup. They're top 2 in terms of blitz percentage. They're both top 5 in terms of pressures of opposing quarterbacks. And we know what happened week 1 for Cleveland, right, against Baltimore. And I felt it was just a really similar matchup on top of maybe the market putting the Browns at like their peak right now. Like you were buying, if you were going to bet on Cleveland today, you were buying them at their ultimate like peak, and you don't want to do that. And then here enough to ensure enough today. And by the way, Baker Mayfield banged up too with the ribs, which I think are probably broken more than they are bruised. And then sure enough, it all showed. But I think really, if we're going forward with Cleveland, if we're talking about fronts, defensive fronts that can blitz and pressure and get to Baker Mayfield, it's going to be a problem for Cleveland going forward.
Completely agree with you. This was my top play of the day, the Steelers. I couldn't believe this line was 3, and you could take away the home field advantage simply because the lack of crowd. But JVT, look at the domination. 17 consecutive wins in Pittsburgh by the Steelers. Roethlisberger 23-2-1 coming into this matchup in his lifetime against the Browns. And I thought you made an excellent point. I think they were a little bit overvalued. I thought this line should have been closer to 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by this one.
Oh, by the way, not to cut you off, no. The look-ahead line was Pittsburgh -5.5.
Yeah, it just surprised me. I want to go to your team for people that don't know. JVT, a big fan of the Indianapolis Colts. Once again, they find themselves in a little bit of a precarious situation in the second quarter, down 21-0. They rally, but Rivers does throw an interception in the first quarter. I just can't really get a finger on this team in terms of what they are consistently. I thought Cincinnati had a great opportunity to be able to win this football game. Couldn't get it done, but give the Colts credit. They find a way to come from behind.
Yep, and look, this is the thing with Indianapolis. So, and I wasn't involved with this game, but this is what I think is important in terms of paying attention and watching on a week-to-week basis, right? Is if you just look at statistics, and again, referencing DVOA, and I heard this so many times this week, how is Joe Burrow going to handle the best defense in the National Football League, right? And it's like, okay, statistically, they are the best defense in the National Football League, but how did you get to that point? And you got to that point by playing the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Minnesota Vikings, the New York Jets, and the Chicago Bears, right? Like, that's not really a gauntlet of offensive like efficiency that you're facing up to that point. And sure enough, the last two games, what have we seen? Cleveland picked apart their secondary. Keep in mind, too, it also ignores the fact that they've suffered a lot of injuries, right? Malik Hooker goes down. You're rolling with a rookie safety with what looks like a high ceiling in Julian Blackmon, but still a rookie safety at that, who, by the the way, iced the game today with an interception. But there's still things, if you look between the lines, you could see the flaws with this team, especially defensively. The market was all over this, right? Like, it opened 9.5, got all the way down to 7.5. But I think this is important in realizing that, like, when you're looking at certain teams, don't just say, cool, best defense against Joe Burrow and a rookie. Like, look at everything. It's a team that's in the bottom half of the league in terms of blitzes, percentages, right, pressures, all of these things, and it worked out well for Joe Burrow in a game that they probably feel like they should have won.
You set me up there well to talk about two things. One, I know I talk a lot of analytics numbers. You do, too. You can't just use them blind,
right?
You still have to look at the matchup and see what you have. Mm-hmm. And this matchup here, you'd mentioned Burrow, and oh, man, what happened with him with the blitz last week against Pittsburgh? Well, it's going to happen again with Indianapolis. No. Indianapolis blitzes 12% of the time. Pittsburgh blitzes more than 50%. He was going to have time to throw, much the same way that Baker Mayfield was going to have time to throw the previous week. So it, you have to see how these things shape up together to see how it really lines up. Afternoon card. Green Bay and Tampa Bay. Green Bay had all of the move during the week, right? 5.5 points this thing moved toward Green Bay. Another measuring stick game. Or is this one we throw out in terms of Green Bay, John?
I don't know if throw out's kind of strong, right? Like, yeah. I think it's really, to me, this game was about, again, like, analyzing the number. And you mentioned it, right? To me, when I am looking at line changes, I always ask myself why. Like, why did this line change? There were three examples this week of lines that moved a lot, of almost a full touchdown. And you had to look at reasons why. We know Monday night why, right? Dak Prescott gets injured. You can argue whether or not 6 points, like the full swing there, was worth it, right? We'll see if that's really going to be true. But there were two lines that moved because of a result. One was this Sunday night game. The other was this Tampa Bay-Green Bay game. Tampa Bay loses on Thursday to Chicago, suffers no major injuries, and yet the market swings at 5 points. And you're like, they didn't get 5 points worse just because they lost to the Chicago Bears. And so, like, I bet Tampa Bay plus two today because it got back up there. I was surprised it got to 2.5. And sure enough, you see, like, is the gap between these two teams what we saw today? No, probably not. But again, it's about playing the market and playing the numbers and realizing where these were. And again, always asking the question, why? Why am I here looking at this number and what is changing? And you can decipher from that. And I thought there were a lot of games that when you looked at the market and the way it handled some of these numbers, you could learn a lot of lessons from reacting to some of the line moves and actually going against where the market was putting some of them.
Do you give a lot of credence to a bye week? Green Bay coming off the bye week. I know next week the Saints are playing Carolina, and I'll be looking at them because Sean Payton has been terrific in terms of coming off the bye. Certain coaches do particularly well. Andy Reid has done well off of bye. Some coaches not as well.
Not really. Like, I guess I factor in a little. I factor it more if there's injuries, right? Like, if there's injuries and somebody's going to come back. But, like, I try really hard not to fall into trends. I don't like to use trends a lot, and I try to take each example, like, at one at a time and see. Each game is its own unique thing and everything surrounding it, analyzing it and going forward from there. So I would say personally, not so much.
I have to ask you this question, John, because it's going to be a talker during the week after watching the Jets in Miami today. They lose 24-0. Last number I saw, 7-1 on the Jets to go 0-16. If you look at the schedule and those individual matchups you just talked about, there is not an obvious one to look to say, I think that's the spot where the Jets might be able to pick one up. They looked horrendous. Of course, it was Joe Flacco behind center and not Sam Darnold, but of course, that's not a huge upgrade. Do you think 0-16 is in play for the Jets?
I mean, it could be because considering how bad they are, but we've seen the National Football League for how long now, right? It is so hard to go 16-0. It's also really hard to go 0-16. Like, you have to be a special kind of bad to go 0-16. And, like, there are, like our hometown Raiders, right? Like, they looked pretty good this past weekend. That's a winnable game for them, right? Like, the gap between these teams, especially if they start to get healthy, wide receiver and quarterback, like, it's not going to be that different. And so I think there are spots where they can get a win. And I'd rather bet no. And you're obviously the odds are the reason why, right? They're so high in terms of the no. Like, I don't think they're going to go 0-16. It's just so hard to do that in the NFL.
John, what do you have coming up for us this week on the Edge?
I'm hoping the Dodgers move on here, but a lot of baseball, obviously, National Football League, and then a full slate of college, of course. So that's going to be interesting to break through all of this and see if we can get some analysis there. A lot of teams playing for the first time, finally, so obviously the Big Ten, Mountain West, and we'll see what those games are going to look like on Saturday.
John will be back in just about an hour with opening lines, getting you set up for week 7 of the NFL. Of course, we've got a couple games tomorrow night as well. Mal and I will be back momentarily to look at a few of the games we haven't gotten to yet in week 6. Matt Heumann's going to join us, Ben Fox, for the last segment as well. This is your Sunday Betting Recap from VSiN and VSiN.com, the Sports Betting Network.